With me next is a wonderful reprieve from all that. My friend Robert Lowen, Bob Lowen. Bob and I work together at California Policy Center. I say we work. He's on the board of directors, but still works like a full-time employee. But my interest in this book that he's written, that I'm going to tell you just a little bit about, and that he's going to discuss at some length, is a really fascinating California story. Not just because Bob was born and raised and has lived his whole life here in California, but because his book, and Bob, I'll just talk to you directly, the book is Lioness of Leiden, and Leiden is in the Netherlands. Tell us why Californians or people who are interested in California ought to care about a book that is about World War II and the Netherlands. What's the connection?
Well, first of all, my mother-in-law, Hetty Kraus, born 1920, died in 1994, lived in California her whole last part of her adult life, basically. And she lived in Leisure World, where all the old people hang out for the last 17 years of her life.
This is Leisure World in Orange County. For those who, I think it's only really a SoCal phenomenon, but maybe there are elsewhere, but they're retirement communities.
It's a retirement community. There's lots of clubs, lots of fun things to do. So she was in the garden club, and she was in the camera club, and she was a golfer. And so people would see this little old lady, you know, chugging around in the retirement community, and nobody knew that she was a war hero. And even in our own family, it was like pulling teeth to get information from her about those days during the war. But she had she was a student at Leiden University, just about 10 miles from The Hague, when Hitler invaded her country. And people were surprised by the invasion because he'd sworn to keep it neutral. You know, good idea to rely on dictators for that kind of promise. And Hetty, though, had seen it coming. And as soon as it happened, she joined the resistance, as soon as she could find a resistance to join. And she went through the war and evolved as a young person under the boot of Nazi domination of her country.
Well, you know, I have been lucky to read the book, which is now out in print, and it's a really lovely book to look at. You must be very proud to hold it. But I got to see it when it was just in draft form. You know, a couple of manuscripts, read through those, and I saw the dramatic improvements. I will offer you this one sadness that I've told you before, that there was this great piece of history, which I think will become a prequel one day, I hope, which is about how Hetty's family came to be a fairly estimable family in Dutch society, owing to, I think, its wealth generated in Indonesia, I want to say.
Yeah. Dutch East Indies.
Yeah. So that part's gone. This is a much more trim, cinematic, vigorous, just really dramatic telling of her life. And maybe you can you find a place you can just read something to give people a sense of what the story is about? And I want people to remember, this is a young woman. She's like, what, 19, 20 years old when this is happening?
Correct. She just turned 20 on the invasion day, May 10, 1940, and it lasted for about 5 years. They signed the armistice in May of 1945. So she was, it's really a coming of age story in many ways. So she was, she just developed her first boyfriend. They'd had some romantic occasions, but they were fighting the last time they saw each other.
Just personal fighting.
Yes, yeah. Yes, just having an argument, yeah. Something that seemed really important to them at the time.
Right.
And then the war started, and everything that seemed important wasn't. Right. And they started seeing what was important, which was to fight the evil empire that was taking over their country. So here's a little vignette from that, from one of Hetty's stories, something she told me. I've, of course, the whole book is fiction. I fictionalized it to bring it to life. So let me just read this very short little piece. It takes place in 1944, toward the end of the war. Hetty stared at the hand grenades tucked tightly into the suitcase she had opened on the floor of Case's living room. "I wonder what would happen if one of these little guys went off right now." She felt the weight of one of them in her hand. "It would obliterate everything living in this room," Case stared at the tiny bomb. "But they're safe as long as you don't pull the pin." "I've been daydreaming about what our boys will do with the to the Germans with these." She carefully replaced the hand grenade and closed the suitcase. "I just need to get them to Delft, right?" Case nodded. "Meet your contact behind the warehouse across the street from the tram station," he said, taking a bite of toast. "The Germans haven't been searching the passenger luggage at Delft station recently, so this should be relatively easy." "An easy trip sounds good," said Hetty, as she practiced carrying the suitcase around Case's living room. "In case it isn't easy," Case held a small white capsule with his fingers. "Hide this." Hetty glanced skeptically at Case. "Cyanide," he whispered, dropping it into her hand. "Oh," said Hetty, examining the capsule between her fingers. "You don't think this will be easy at all, do you?"
It's such a grim moment. And at the same time, it sounds like she had a sense of humor, sort of.
The reality, she definitely had a sense of humor. When she told her stories, almost always there was a humorous element to it. This particular story about the smuggling hand grenades in the, under the noses of the Germans, she told it as kind of high humor. Because because she had a former boyfriend got on the tram with her and kept wanting to kind of make whoopee with her, wanted to take her out, and she kept thinking about the hand grenades in her suitcase and knew that she had to turn him down, even though she was interested in him.
So you were saying that this was not a these were not stories that she told you. Like, she didn't just talk about this all the time. She lived this life. I'm reminded of, you know, when I read this, I was thinking about all the people I have met in my life who, you know, even if they're not old, but particularly with older people, you wonder what they've seen, who they've been, what they've done. And in the case of a lot of the folks I grew up around, you know, back in the 60s when I was a little boy, in the 70s, some of my neighbors were guys who'd been in, like, you know, Korea and Vietnam. A few of them had been in World War II. And I knew them as, you know, Mr. So-and-so or Colonel So-and-so if they insisted mowing their lawn. And this is a lady who, as you say, was living right down the street from where I grew up in a retirement community, playing golf and working in the gardening club. And I you know, I can't imagine that many people there, because she doesn't sound self-revealing. She sounds like the kind of person who's very, very quiet. I doubt many people in her own community had any idea this was anybody other than, you know, a sweet lady who golfs and plays, you know, plays a mean game of golf and knows how to garden.
Well, you have to take into account that she was damaged by the war. I mean, she suffered terribly from the war. And you have to read the book to get all the ways that she suffered. But she came out of it with PTSD in a significant way. She had what they called survivor syndrome. When I met her, she was already seeing a psychiatrist on a regular basis to deal with her war traumas, and she dealt with them all the way until her death. And so there were occasions when I would try to gently bring some of the war stories out of her because I was so interested in them, and she would just simply literally dissolve when she tried to tell it. And she couldn't finish the story.
What do you mean dissolve? Like cry?
Cry, and lose control, and then we had to comfort her, and then not talk about it again for a little while. And it was and when you find this out, as I in my research for this book, I've read many other books sort of like it, and not necessarily about the Dutch resistance, but what you find is that people are very reluctant to tell their story. And the reason they're reluctant is because it's so complicated for them psychologically. Yeah. Nobody, none of us here in this country in our age bracket has really gone through the trauma that she went through when you're totally at the mercy of an imperial power that has taken over your country, taken over the government of your country, and basically goes around picking up people off the street if they're Jews or gypsies or Seventh-day Adventists and hauling them off to camps.
Yeah.
And a few brave people hid those people. And a few brave people, like my mother-in-law, brought them food, money, you know, ration cards, things like that, so they could stay hidden. And some of them did and survived, and many of them were caught. And those who were caught hiding them got to go to the camps too.
Yeah.
So it's just an absolutely devastating thing. Maybe it's maybe there's some comparison, you know, to what's going on in Ukraine, but not for us. We're not really don't have that experience.
I don't think there's a spoiler in this. I just wanted to ask you because I remember, you know, I'm connecting this also again back to California. When she first came back, did she not live up in the Bay Area where she worked at a girls' school or a religious school of some sort?
No, it was a rich kid's school.
Rich kid's school.
I call it a rich kid's school. Okay. I don't know. That's not probably fair. But she was her story is she really wanted to get out of Europe after the war. And she met Walter, who's my father-in-law, and they got married in 2 weeks after they met, and they honeymooned at Lake Lugano in Switzerland, just outside of Italy, and my wife was conceived near Lake Lugano, so my mother-in-law told me. She's a very earthy woman who just told would tell you everything, you know, about her life. And and then they moved to South America and lived on a farm in South America. So this is my sequel, okay, because it's not in the book. And they get to this farm in South America where she takes a bottomland area that was all swamp, and she figures out how to grow a cash crop there, mint, which they then export the essence of mint and make a decent living off of the mint from that she's created on this farm. So then along comes something called the Alliance for Progress. Mm. Okay, so you could say this is the political part, okay? Yes. But it's not really. It's just her story. And the Alliance for Progress was something invented by Americans for South Americans to how to fix it, how to fix South America, because it's all messed up. And we know better than everybody else how to fix things. So let's just take the land away from the landowners and give it to all the peasants or the people that don't have land and see how that works out. So basically this farm that she had built, raising her two daughters, you know, along with Walter, who had rescued her from Europe. Walter was a Swiss guy, by the way, who had been working in Europe during the war. I mean, working in South America. And and then they just snatch it away and hand her worthless bonds in exchange for that. But she told me, she said, but there's always a silver lining. And for her, the silver lining was they gave she and her daughters visas to come to America. And she said that was better than the price of a farm.
Wow.
In her mind.
Yeah.
And she was a very, very loyal American. She and my daughter were very quick to become American citizens as soon as they had the opportunity to. So she moved to Marin County back when it wasn't really Marin County. It wasn't like it is today. She bought a house for like $18,000 on halfway up Mount Tamalpais, and it's the house where we were married. And she worked in a school teaching fourth graders how to speak French. She spoke six languages, and she then went. She didn't like really the teaching part of things, so she became the school's gardener. And because it was a rich kid's school, they really loved the idea that they had this Dutch lady who speaks six languages going around keeping the gardens in the school. That was kind of one of their little sticks that they sold people on.
Well, I so love this. I cannot recommend this book enough. And I've told you, Bob, that I think it really belongs on the screen. I mean, first of all, it just kind of hits the zeitgeist perfectly right now. We're looking for stories of female heroism. You don't have to make this one up. This is, you know, you say it's a novelization or it's a fictional account. And yet, you know, I know the story well enough with you. You've talked me through this stuff a few times that, you know, it is at its heart. This is nonfiction. Many of these are really real events. The hand grenades, for instance, that's an actual historical event here.
Right.
And so it just seems to me like this belongs on the big screen or on the little screen now, I guess, you know, Netflix or, you know, Prime Video or something, Hulu. Just an amazing story. Have I missed anything here, Bob?
Well, first things first, I would say, just to remind you that the book is actually, the launch date is actually April 4th.
Oh my gosh.
So although you have seen the hardback version, which were delivered to my house last week, the public will see it on the 4th of April, and you can go to Amazon or any of the other places where books are sold and buy it then. I'm with you. I think it'd be fun to make it into a movie, but right now we're just trying to sell some books and, you know, get people to read it. For me, this was a project of love. You know, I just wanted to tell Hetty's story to preserve her legacy. And after us, there won't be anybody to tell this story. And I realized that if I'm going to preserve her legacy, I've got to write a book that's good enough that people want to read it. And so far, so good. I've been taking it to book clubs and people like it. It's a real, they call it a page turner. I think it is a page turner. It's got a lot of excitement in it and a lot of personal interest, you know. There's a love story in there and some other stuff that's fun to read.
Well, a California author, a California novel in some respects, despite the fact that it almost entirely takes place in Europe during World War II, about a woman who ultimately becomes, as you say, a very proud American and a Californian. So that's my friend Bob Lowen. He is the chairman of the board of California Policy Center, but he's here today talking about The Lioness of Leiden. And I'll put that in the show note, Bob, and people can go check out the book themselves. And I really do encourage it. It's just awesome work. Well done, buddy.
Thank you. Yeah, go to the website.
Yeah.
Thanks.